I'd like to preach this season of Advent on something I've not really preached on much before. I'd like to focus particularly on the first readings from the Old Testament, as well as our responsorial psalm this season. First readings for all four Sundays of Advent come from the book of the prophet Isaiah. Isaiah is probably one of the most poetic of the Old Testament prophets, and he's sometimes been referred to as like the Shakespeare of the Old Testament. The prophets, such as Isaiah, you know, they're often a bit harder to understand because we don't always know the biblical context for their writings. And of course, it's usually easier to understand or preach on the gospel. But I think for this year, as we look toward the coming of Christ at Christmas, I think a closer reflection on Isaiah is just worth some of our attention. To be more specific about my homilies for this Advent, we might say that we'll be reflecting on the virtues of Advent through the prophet Isaiah. Now, the virtue given particular focus on this first Sunday of Advent is hope. Hope is really kind of the virtue really for the whole season. But it comes out particularly strong in readings today. Isaiah, so maybe just some background first from about this passage from Isaiah. Isaiah in today's passage speaks about his hope for Jerusalem, his hope for Jerusalem being restored in a coming age, in the future. For much of the period when Isaiah was writing, this is about 700 years before the time of Jesus, just to give you some time context, northern Israel was near being annihilated, or already had been, and southern Judah, so both of these kingdoms, which had encompassed God's chosen people, southern Judah had been really reduced by the Assyrian nation to being like a rump state, consisting really only of the area surrounding the capital of Jerusalem. In Judah itself, sincere worshipers of the Lord were pretty few in number. And the culture was dominated by kind of a hypocritical or cultural religion with some paganism mixed in. It was a very frustrating and discouraging period in history for those who were wholly devoted to the Lord, the God of Israel, who found themselves outnumbered, powerless, and really culturally impotent in the face of forces that seemed ready to extinguish from the face of the earth any witness of the true God. I think it's maybe somewhat parallel to the way, you know, some people feel in the church today. Nonetheless, in this time period, Isaiah sees this vision of hope. Against all odds, the day will come when the nations of the earth will seek out the Lord and come to Mount Zion. What is Mount Zion? It's a name we hear in the scriptures often. Mount Zion is the mountain of Jerusalem and the temple. It was where Jerusalem was constructed and the temple was built. So nations, Isaiah sees, would come to Mount Zion to learn God's law. And the word of the Lord will judge the nations and bring them peace. He says, in the days to come, the mountain of the Lord's house, Mount Zion, the Lord's house being his temple, shall be established as the highest mountain. All nations shall stream toward it. So those not of God's chosen people, not of the people of Israel, would stream toward it. Why would they stream toward God's mountain? To receive instruction about God's ways, to receive his truth and to be formed by it. And so one might ask if, you know, this very rosy, hope-filled vision of Isaiah has been fulfilled. Well, it is essential to recognize that Jesus, 700 years later, celebrated the Last Supper and instituted the sacrifice and the covenant of the Mass, the Eucharist, right on Mount Zion before his death. And so every time we celebrate the Mass, we are taken sacramentally to that upper room on Mount Zion in order to renew there our covenant relationship with the Lord that we have in our baptism. The Mass really makes Mount Zion present for us. As people from all nations today stream to the Mass each weekend, there's a fulfillment of Isaiah's words that many people shall come and say, "Come, let us climb the Lord's mountain." The church really is the new Zion. Now, our responsorial psalm this Sunday comes from Psalm 122. And it's good for us to think about the psalms and to really kind of reflect on them when we sing them or say them, because they all have a historical context in the Bible, and oftentimes they were liturgical, like they would have been used, you know, in the worship of the temple in Jerusalem. So it just so happens that this is the same psalm from last Sunday's Solemnity of Christ the King, only it's a longer reading of it. So in the context of today's Mass, this psalm is sort of a proclamation, or it's like a confession on our lips that we have come up to the new Zion and now inhabit this new or sacramental Jerusalem, which is the church. Let us come rejoicing to the house of the Lord. What does this psalm have to do with Advent? Like Isaiah's vision, it's a picture of the joy of heaven and of Christ's second coming, and of his first coming 2,000 years ago, which was only a foretaste or preview of things to come. Solomon's temple in Jerusalem on Mount Zion was only a pale image of the beauty of Christ and of his first coming at Christmas. And that is only a pale image of the beauty and glory of his second coming and of his kingdom, kingdom of heaven at the end of time. Now, for those who may feel discouraged, if we think about it, because it seems like many nations that once streamed to the Lord have now kind of turned aside to follow maybe a more secular mindset, like those in Judah at Isaiah's time, may we take heart and renew our hope in the Lord's promises this season of Advent. In Isaiah's time, the fortunes of those who worshiped the God of Israel were so much lower than those of the church of our own day. The secular culture of today is so literally sterile that its adherents cannot muster enough hope and joy to raise enough children to replace themselves. And we not forget that the culture of death eventually kills itself. In a spirit of Advent hopefulness, we should continue to lay new foundations for the new Zion. In other words, as we spoke of over the last few weeks, we must strive to become better disciples of Christ the Lord ourselves and invite and challenge others in our life to that same life of discipleship. The prophet Isaiah was not dreaming. He wasn't making things up. What Isaiah saw was the real future. He saw a whole world of saints from all the nations of the world together worshiping the same God, the true God, in great joy. It was also a world without war. In the continuation of the vision, which we'll hear in next Sunday's reading, there's not even war among the animals. Lambs and lions, they lie down together. Probably heard that passage before. None of this sounds much like the world today. Far from it, in fact. Ultimately, it is a vision of the world after Christ's second coming. The reading really applies to both, his first coming and his second coming. But it will happen just as truly as his first coming, his first Advent, the first Christmas, really happened. Both Advents were future to the prophet Isaiah. To us, one is in the past, and the other is in the future. Meanwhile, between his first coming and his second coming, that time in which we stand, what did Jesus leave us in this world? You know, besides a world full of wars and tragedies and cancers and divorces and terrorists, what did he give us? What do we have to hold on to in this in-between time? He gave us God. He gave us God. He gave us his very self. He left us his church, his mystical body, which even with all of our human warts, is the only place in this world where we have his real presence in the Eucharist, body, blood, soul, and divinity. And he left us his Holy Spirit, the key to holiness and the key to happiness. Perhaps in our lifetimes, in our time and place in history, we'll see a renewal in our world and in the church. Or perhaps we won't. What is key is that we remain faithful, ever mindful of the fact that God has given us his very self, and press on in Advent hope, hopefulness, looking forward to his second coming.